May it please the court, my name is Benjamin Longstreth. I represent the Natural Resources Defense Council. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal. This case concerns EPA's failure to comply with measures passed by Congress to protect the ozone layer from methyl bromide, a fumigant used to sterilize fields. Methyl bromide is currently the most powerful ozone-depleting chemical still in widespread use in the United States, and it is a significant threat to the ozone layer. In the 2007 exemption rule, EPA adopted an unreasonable interpretation of Section 604(d)(6) of the Clean Air Act, and furthermore, its decision is arbitrary and capricious because the action taken in the 2007 rule is inconsistent with EPA's commitments both in the rule itself and other public forum. There are two issues concerning the relationship of this case and NRDC's challenge to the 2005 rule that I'd like to address before I turn to the merits of NRDC's claim. These two issues are, first, why can NRDC pursue its claim, current challenge to the 2007 exemption rule, when similar claims were raised in the context of the rule governing critical use exemption?
You have to get over here.
Yes, I understand that, Your Honor. The second issue that I'd like to address is why this court's prior decision does not control this case. Turning
that's
to
the other hurdle you'll have to get over if you hear the
word. I appreciate that. So let's turn to the first issue. NRDC can pursue this case because it's challenging issues that EPA raised for public comment in the notice of proposed rulemaking for the 2007 critical use exemption rule and decided in the final 2007 rule.
Your best shot at that is the passage you quote at page 5 of your reply brief. And I don't think it's altogether clear, but what is there in the context that you would argue supports the broad reading that you would give it?
The context for the 2007 rule. What
the context in the notice of proposed rulemaking.
Yeah, you're claiming a reopening.
Correct. Before we get into the reopening, I think it's important to recognize that in the rule that EPA decided in 2004, there was a framework established and a specific exemption for 2005, and the framework that was established did not mandate any particular result in 2007. So EPA had to make an affirmative decision in 2007. So it's not quite akin to a case where the agency is returning and deciding the exact same question new. But in 2007, EPA sought comment, just to quote one piece, it sought comment on the amount of critical use methyl bromide.
Is this the passage from page 5?
Let me just...
something better.
I hope so, but perhaps there's something better on page 5. Yes.
It's at page 15 of the joint appendix.
Yes. So EPA seeks comment on whether, in the critical use exemption context, it would be appropriate to adjust the level of new production and import. I was actually quoting a more generic piece, but so EPA both asks, what's the proper level that we should allow, and also in that context considers whether there should be a stockpile of a particular amount.
Right.
In the end, EPA did not select any particular amount. It essentially punted on this question, but...
Stepping back a moment, of the options that it had specifically identified, it chose the most restrictive one, the 7.5% of baseline.
Correct. Right. Which in our view is simply not
a
sufficient amount.
I think I understand how your fundamental argument, essentially about the stockpile and about non-critical uses, could all be an argument with respect to picking an optimal stockpile. But it's a little hard for me to get out of this passage an invitation to renew consideration of the question of whether any non-critical uses can go forward, or reducing the stockpile instantly. Reducing the stockpile instantly to zero, possibly? I'm not sure.
Well, in 2007, the stockpile actually was large enough that EPA could have used only stockpile and not allowed new production and still have had stockpile amounts remaining. And we're not, we haven't argued that it would necessarily have to be reduced to zero, although it's our view that that's the best, that would be the reading we would prefer. But our central argument.
Let's suppose there's some sort of optimal stockpile at any period when there's any actual use of methyl bromide to go on. Your position, if I understand it, is to go to the minimum, that minimum level, as soon as possible, right?
That's the most protective for the environment, particularly in a situation.
Well, the most protective subject, I assume, to the necessities of actually having some on hand, because I mean it's a little one doesn't imagine it just going straight out the door of the factory to the user, right? And there being no slack in the system,
right? In terms of the amount of the stockpile, I think it's important to consider whether that stockpile, what that stockpile is being used for. And currently, EPA allows anyone to utilize that, whether you have a critical use or a non-critical use.
Now, this passage certainly doesn't directly raise that issue, right? Indirectly, perhaps.
No, I mean, but to the extent that if EPA, in our view, in order to not use the stockpile and sort of determine a amount of slack, EPA would be required to resolve this question identified on page 5, and it fails to.
Can you give me that sentence again?
Yes, EPA would be required to determine what the appropriate stockpile amount is in the pipeline, in essence, as you're suggesting. There needs
right.
to be some amount.
Right.
And EPA in 2007 failed to do that, and yet still exempts new production. And in our view, the Clean Air Act 604D6 requires that EPA, the Clean Air Act bans new production and requires that any exemption must be made consistent with the protocol, which EPA determines requires it to look to the decisions of the parties.
Yeah, but I'm just trying to focus on the question of no non-critical uses, which the more I think about it seems to be the core of your position. In other words, you would say, yes, this is a complicated issue, what the optimal stockpile is, but that choice should be driven by the no non-critical use concept, right?
Correct. If EPA did not permit non-critical users, and this was a system that was protective from right. sort of leakage, then the stockpile would not pose the threat that it does to the ozone layer, because that methyl bromide would not be escaping into
right,
the atmosphere
right, right.
for uses that are not critical.
I guess I come back to the question, though, if they resolved in the framework rule that they were not, and that does seem to me inevitable, that they resolved that they were not going to go to a no non-critical uses, sorry about the double negative, no non-critical uses concept. Is this sufficient to open that up again?
In our view, this is certainly sufficient to open up the question. EPA plainly posed the question.
The question is, what's the question?
Well, I was hoping to see if I can capture that, of how much new production should be allowed and how much of the stockpile should be used.
Right.
If EPA has not reopened the question of use by non-critical users and allows that, that simply, in our view, is a factor that the court should consider in determining whether EPA has reached a reading of 604D6 that is...
That's jumping ahead to the merits, right? It sounds to me.
Well, correct. In our view, EPA has opened the question of plainly asking for it in public comment, and in fact there being no prior decision of how shall it exercise whatever discretion it has under 604D6 to determine.
I thought we agreed there had been such a decision, namely a rejection of the no non-critical uses idea.
In the framework rule.
Right.
I agree. There was that decision, and EPA did not indicated that it did not reopen that.
Okay.
We argue, for one thing, that is so integral to the question that EPA did reopen, which is what is the proper amount of methyl bromide that should be produced through new production, and how much should be used from stockpiles.
Your clearing of the first threshold here depends upon that sentence being a reopening. Is that correct?
Yes, and
your time
as
hard
I
unless that's a reopening. Is that correct?
Correct. I mean, in our view, reopening is somewhat narrower a expression of it, given that there was no prior decision on the question of how much of the stockpile should be obtained from new sources versus old sources. So that's an issue that that is presented EPA when it makes a new decision and puts forward that decision for public notice and public comment, is required to comply with the law, and we think the Western Coal Traffic League case, while the holding in that case was that a party was barred from challenging the same administrative decision. In that case, the court stated that
unless we have further questions on that, well, I'm going to extend you about an extra 3 minutes to talk about the preclusion issue.
I have one more question
okay.
on this. Well, it goes to the broader question, too. In your comments to the EPA, you make arguments with respect to the optimal stockpile, which are completely independent of the concept of no non-critical uses, of getting rid of non-critical uses.
That's correct, although I believe our comments also addressed the no non-critical uses issue, and that's an issue that we believe is integrally connected in that it is particularly the use of the stockpile, one of the primary ways that additional ozone is released to the atmosphere in contravention of the Clean Air Act, it is the fact that non-critical users have the stockpile available because EPA is not complying, is not acting consistent with the Montreal Protocol.
You want to move now to the preclusion issue?
I would be delighted to. The question of the prior decision, whether stare decisis resolves this case.
Rather stronger than stare decisis, I think it may be actual preclusion.
Okay. I'll address that then. I mean, the preclusion issue, I think, goes to the, as I mentioned before, the fact that this is a new administrative decision. None of the preclusion cases that we have seen identified a separate new administrative agency action in the Western Coal Traffic League case that I mentioned. The court found you could not, as you all well know and I understand, challenge the same decision twice, but where there's a new issue and you have...
What's the new issue here? I mean, even if it were a reissuance or whatever, if the issue has been decided against you, you could be precluded by issue preclusion, res judicata. And what's the narrowest statement you can give me of the issue you say has not been decided against you here?
Whether or not under the Clean Air Act, Section 604D6, EPA acted in a way that was adopted a reasonable interpretation of that. In the prior case, as this court stated, EPA fashions the entirety, I'm quoting from that decision, the entirety of its argument around the proposition that the decisions under the protocol are law. So in that case, NRDC was arguing that these decisions are part of the Montreal Code of Protocol Treaty and have been incorporated as binding law that leaves EPA no discretion. And we have accepted in our argument before you here in our papers, we've accepted that issue and are simply addressing the question of whether or not in interpreting 604D6, EPA's interpretation is consistent, reasonable, sorry, and that provision requires that it be consistent with the Montreal Protocol.
But what's new in the new decision that wasn't decided against you in the last litigation?
To the extent that the court was correctly stating that all of our argument in the last case.
We were correct there. We're bound by it. So right or wrong, it's right.
Right. I concur that that's the case. In this case, EPA has made a new decision. It is a new transaction under res judicata principles. These are claims that could not have been brought regarding the amount that EPA should allow new exemptions in 2007, could not have been brought in 2005, and involve different facts before the agency. The agency requested public comment. Of particular importance is the fact that the agency finally indicated what the size of the stockpile was.
All right. I think we've now used the extra 3 minutes that
I understand.
Awarded you, and so we'll give you back a couple more for rebuttal after we hear from
them. I appreciate that, Your Honor.
Okay. We'll hear from the respondent.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Stephen Rossack. I'm an attorney with the Justice Department appearing on behalf of the Environmental Protection Agency. With me at counsel's table this morning is Diane McConkie with EPA's Office of General Counsel and Jeffrey Klein, an attorney with the State Department. I intend to address two issues this morning. The first is that the court need not reach the merits of NRDC's claim because NRDC is relitigating claims that this court rejected last year in NRDC's challenge to the 2004 framework rule. The framework rule governs the manner in which EPA promulgates exemptions in any given year, and as I will explain, EPA did not reopen the framework rule when it promulgated the 2007 exemption. Second, if time permits, I will explain why EPA reasonably construed the United States treaty commitments as one, allowing new production of methyl bromide without requiring the exhaustion of stocks, and two, not restricting stocks to critical uses. In Sumitomo versus Avagliano, the Supreme Court held that the executive branch's construction of treaty provisions is entitled to great weight. It is also...
You've left into the merits?
Well, I was just going to say that we're entitled to the highest degree of deference in this case because it involves foreign policy and it involves an area within EPA's technical expertise, and so the combination is just a lot of deference.
But you're now about to turn to the...
I'll go back to the...
What was opened?
I'll go back to the preclusion argument. I don't think there's any question that NRDC is relitigating claims that this court rejected in NRDC versus EPA, published at 464, Fed Third 1. On December 23rd, 2004, EPA promulgated the framework rule. And as I said just moments ago, this governs what EPA does in any given year, whether it's the 2006 exemption, if it's this year's exemption.
Well, so, I mean, that does make front and center this passage at page 5.
Well, and I will get to that specifically, because I think the case does hinge on that specific passage. But if we back up to the framework rule, I think EPA made two very fundamental determinations in the framework rule that applied to the 2005 exemption, the 2006, this year, and those were that stocks need not be depleted before new production is allowed, and that stocks can be used for non-critical uses. That was done in the framework rule, and the court rejected that. In the preamble to the 2000 exemption, which is what NRDC purports to challenge here, EPA made clear, and I'm quoting from the preamble, that it's not changing the framework of the exemption program.
I'm sorry, where are you?
This is at JA 27, column 1.
Oh, but now that's the rule. Your problem
year.
Is in the notice of proposed rulemaking.
Right, and we can move directly to that. And on page 5 of the reply brief, which is what NRDC's reopener argument is premised on, they say, and I'll quote, an alternative means of addressing stocks, namely whether EPA should draw the stockpile down to a particular level calculated to represent an appropriate amount of methyl bromide in the supply chain. And EPA did do that. But that request for comment doesn't suggest that stock depletion is a condition precedent to any new production. It's simply what EPA does every year consistent with the framework rule. It figures what amount should come from stocks and what amount should come from new production. And here,
But there are different arguments that can be made with respect to that, right?
There are. For example...
And I guess the NRDC argument fundamentally is the argument that non-critical uses should not happen is relevant to that, and that therefore that sentence opened that issue.
It didn't. That goes to something completely different. I think that statement suggests only that there may be an amount of stocks other than zero that should be preserved. It does not suggest that EPA is somehow...
I honestly think it asks for a good deal more than that, right?
I don't see how you could read that statement that way, Your Honor. I mean, the fundamental decision that EPA made in 2004 was that you don't need to deplete stocks before you allow new production.
Right.
It did that in the 2005 exemption, it did that in the 2006 exemption, and it did it again in the 2007. You have to decide what amount of stocks are going to be used each year, and that,
right.
Do you have to draw everything down to zero before you allow anything new? It's how much should come from stocks. We don't need to deplete stocks, but okay. We want to deplete stocks.
Why isn't a concern for non-critical uses persisting relevant to answering the question that EPA appears to ask here?
I'm not sure I understand your question. If that gets to the merits as to why non-critical...
And maintaining a... be appropriate to adjust the level with the goal of maintaining a stockpile of some specified duration, comment, how many months. At least it can be read as broadly opening the issue of an optimal stockpile, right?
And that issue is fundamentally different from the issue we addressed in the framework rule, which was whether or not you need to deplete stocks before you can allow new production. I mean, here we're saying we want to deplete...
When you frame it that way, yes. When you frame it as is not the continuation of non-critical uses relevant, I'm not so sure.
I just see it as two completely different issues.
Is there other language in this section H that you see as helping you on that?
From the treaty itself?
No, section H of the notice of proposed rulemaking.
I think that this...
Well, anything in the notice of rulemaking, that's the section it's in.
In the rule, we specifically stated that the agency did not seek comment on the two stock issues, and that we addressed those issues in comments to the framework rule. And that's at Joint Appendix 37, Column 1. I mean, NRDC did submit comments trying to reopen those two framework rule decisions. And I think if you look at pages 32 and 34 of NRDC's brief, it just makes it crystal clear that they're relitigating the same claim. And on page 32, they say, EPA has defied the key commitment that stockpiles be exhausted before new production is allowed. In fact, that's the same issue, and I think it dovetails nicely with the language they cited. That's the best language in the preamble that they could use to support that their argument. And
I'm sorry, 32 of what?
Their opening brief.
Opening brief, okay.
Yeah, they say, quote, EPA has defied the key commitment that stockpiles be exhausted before new production is allowed. And then second, on page 34, I think the statement that they make also sums their argument up nicely. Stockpiles may not be used for non-critical purposes. Those are the two fundamental decisions that they are trying to relitigate here because they don't like the decision this court handed down last year. And that is the law of the circuit. And, I mean, it's the same exact claim. The fact that EPA each year promulgates an exemption needs to figure out how much amount should come from stocks and tries to optimize that is a pretty unremarkable. I mean, it's the way that the exemption works. And I think it bears mentioning that NRDC is foreclosed from challenging decisions that EPA made in the framework rule, but it is not foreclosed from challenging EPA's to issue an exemption in any given year. For example, excuse me, the parties to the treaty here decided that the U.S. should use an amount of stocks equal to 6.2% of baseline for critical uses in 2007. EPA exercised its discretion to require more than that, 7.5% of baseline rather than 6.2. NRDC could have challenged that particular number. NRDC could have challenged the carryover number that EPA used. NRDC could have said that we did not act consistent with the framework rule. There are any number of arguments that NRDC could have but chose not to make. NRDC instead chose to raise the same arguments that it did the last time around. Whether they try to characterize this case as a Chevron Step 1 and the framework rule as a Chevron Step 2, it's irrelevant. NRDC could have raised a Chevron Step 2 argument, and I think we have got a good argument they did in the framework rule. So the fact that they're trying to recharacterize this is just, I think, irrelevant. There was no reopener. We asked for comments on what an appropriate amount of drawdown would be, not whether it's a precondition. And I mean, the record demonstrates that, and we actually just in the preamble to this rule, we say we didn't reopen the framework issues. We say that we were promulgating the exemption consistent with the framework rule. That's a direct quote from the preamble at Joint Appendix 24, Column 1, and 27, Column 1.
Oh, but that's the final rule.
That's the 2007
our
rule.
Is the notice, right? Notice of
Well, that's right, the notice. And, I mean, I think I've...
Is there some language that helps you in that, on that particular point? We're sticking with the framework?
I think there's an absence of discussion on whether or not we're looking into revisiting those fundamental determinations. I mean, I just see this as a complete black and white issue here. I mean, those were two very specific, discrete, fundamental determinations that were made in the framework rule. EPA said that it didn't want to reconsider them, said that comments were received, but we're not going to address them. We addressed issues on those two fundamental decisions in the response to comments for the 2000 rule. And the only thing we're going to look at is the amount, not whether it has to be drawn down to zero before you get the exemption, but what is the amount that should come from stocks this year. I think on their face, both the notice of proposed rulemaking and the final rule are very clear on this. I mean, and I think, again, NRDC, the language they said on page 5 of the reply brief, that's the best that they have, and it just doesn't meet the bar. Do you want me to address the I mean, with respect to the merits, what I can say very I guess succinctly, is that the treaty itself addresses production and consumption. Consumption is defined very specifically to mean production plus imports minus exports. Excuse me. Well, this is helpful. I would direct the court's attention to Joint Appendix, page 5, column 1, right at the top. And I'll just read. The framework will establish the bulk of the framework for the critical use exemption in the United States, including trading provisions and record keeping and reporting obligations. In this action, EPA is not proposing to change the framework of the exemption program, but rather to establish a list of approved critical uses for 2007 and issue allowances that will determine the amount of methyl bromide available for those uses consistent with the framework rule. So that appears both in the proposal and in the final rule, and I think it's evident from the bulk of both documents as well. So getting back to the merits, consumption is production plus imports minus exports. The treaty doesn't itself address use, and it doesn't require the drawdown of stocks. Authority for new production does not rest on depleting stocks.
I'll take it an arbitrary and capricious argument could simply be that the environmental values have been insufficiently observed, right?
Well, I mean, I don't think that they made that argument here. I think they could have, but I would also, that bears mentioning that. I think NRDC.
Do they have if they're precluded? Is that argument on the table?
I don't think it's on the table.
We're momentarily
they didn't
assuming
make it.
There's no provision.
Yeah. I mean, it's not on the table. They could have made that argument. And I think NRDC overstates the stock issue. And I'd like to point the court to two things. One, in the preamble for the final rule for 2007, we note that drawdown of the stockpile has been approximately 12% of baseline per year, which is a significant drawdown. So the stocks are going down. And if you look at the notice of proposed rulemaking for the 2008 rule, EPA estimates that the stockpile has now been drawn down to such an extent that we don't have, it's less than 1 year's worth. So we've got less than 1 year's left in stocks. It's being drawn down at a significant rate. And so even that aspect of their argument's been overstated. Unless the court has questions.
Thank you, counsel. And
thank you.
We'll give petitioner back 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Your Honors, I'd like to just start by looking at the, again, at the language that counsel for the government quoted regarding the framework rule. And you'll see that the items that are discussed there are trading provisions and record keeping and reporting obligations, and that does not, in our view, encompass the basic questions raised in the rule regarding the amount, whether there should be an amount of the stockpile reserved, and the basic question of how much in 2007 should be come from stocks versus new production. With respect to the stockpile drawdown, NRDC is glad to see that there is less stockpile available, but that doesn't necessarily mean that those stocks have been used for to serve critical uses versus non-critical uses. So that's not necessarily evidence that we are complying with the Clean Air Act's ban on methyl bromide and the requirements for the exemption rule. To conclude, if the court has no questions.
Thank you, counsel.
thank you very much.
Jason Smith.